Sorry, no more.
Wow, that was extraordinary. I don't think I've ever seen a program quite like that. Sorry, I was viewing something. It was a bit like radio. I was viewing something that you couldn't see, but this whole program was coming up on the computer. Good morning, everybody, and welcome. And here we are again for another wonderful day at the LearnX Convention and Expo. This is a treat. This is a real treat this morning. Mr. Stephen Downes works for the National Research Council of Canada, where he served as a senior research. Yes, where he has served as senior research, I should say it that way, based in Moncton, New Brunswick, since 2001. He's affiliated with the Learning and Collaborative Technologies Group, the Institute for Information Technology, and Downes specialises in the fields of online learning, new media, pedagogy, and philosophy. Now, I learned a new word this morning, and it is epistemology. Now, some of you may know it, but I didn't, which is the philosophy of knowledge. This man is a knowledge specialist. What he knows is knowledge, and it's mixed. It's from philosophy, it's from computers, it's from the media, and he manages to bring all this together. When you look at his background, it's these many, many faceted aspects that have all been pulled into the one. He's perhaps best known for his daily newsletter, Old Daily, which is distributed by web, email and RSS to thousands of subscribers around the world. He's published numerous articles both online and in print, including The Future of Online Learning in 1998, Learning Objects 2000, Resource Profiles in 2003, E-Learning 2.0 in 2005. He's a popular speaker, appearing in hundreds of events around the world over the last 15 years. And on the important question of cat or dog, he has four cats. Please welcome Stephen Downes.
Good morning, everybody. And I'll just ask that the sound person turn the microphone as low as possible while still providing sound so that we reduce the echo. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here in Sydney. Haven't been here for about 3 years now, so it's really nice to be back and in the warm weather, which I'm not really used to. I've got a short time period today, early on a Thursday morning. I'm still not sure of the days, and I'm sort of almost over jet lag. So I'm going to cover a fair bit of ground. I'm going to do so fairly rapidly. Sorry about that. But I do wish to leave time for conversation and for questions. And again, in such a short time slot, that's going to be a bit tricky. What I want to talk about today is not how to teach other people. You get all kinds of other people here at this conference will tell you how to teach other people. I saw a bunch of them yesterday, and no doubt we'll all see more today. What I want to talk about today is your personal professional development, what you as individuals are doing to support your own learning, your own knowledge. Forget the corporate need stuff for a bit. Forget the corporate mission profile and all of that. Think about what you are doing in order to enhance your professional development, your learning, your career. Because we've seen very abundant evidence recently, if you do not take care of your career yourself, you will lose it. Because your boss will continue, but you will be laid off. That's the reality these days. I want to talk about this in terms of three overall principles: interaction, usability, and relevance. And what I'm going to do for each of those principles is talk a little bit about what it is, talk a little bit about why we want it, how to get it, a little bit about what types of these things there are, some principles, and then some guerrilla tactics that you can use. As you can see now, I've set up a nice neat little grid for this talk. If you're sitting there taking notes, you can create a nice little grid with three columns and six rows or whatever. Just as an aside, is a lesson on how to structure a talk so that you can do it off the top of your head in two easy steps. Three major subject areas, five major divisions, gives me a set of about 15, 18 things that I can talk about for 3 minutes each. I just want to preface this discussion by pointing out very importantly that the three principles and the six subject areas do not describe reality. And indeed, in all of the talks that you're hearing at this conference and that you'll hear in other conferences about this theory and that theory, none of those theories are reality. You don't need to worry about that. Reality is complex. It's messy. The best you can do is to manage to maybe recognize some things you've seen before, to sort of navigate your way, or as Douglas Rushkoff says, to surf your way through reality. Theories are just ways of describing reality. They're ways of slicing and dicing things so that people like me who have to give talks can organize them in nice, neat ways. But they are not reality themselves. So you can let go of the theories. Okay. First part of the theory. Interaction. This is the first key principle of personal self-development. Interaction is, very loosely speaking, participation in a learning community or a community of practice or a network or some such thing. We see a diagram up there. This is a very famous diagram now, the future VLE diagram. Describes a personal learning network. That's you at the center, that's the rest of the world connected to you through various protocols and programs and formats and all of that Web 2.0 goodness. Why do you want interaction? Well, you probably already know this and you don't need me to tell you this, but I'll tell you anyways because I have 3 minutes to fill. We want the human contact, we want the connection, the knowing that there's a person at the other end of the line, and we want the human content. We want answers to our questions. We want to know how to do things. We want to know when to do things, where to go, what to do, and why you're doing it. So we want to be able to communicate with other people. Now, very important point, you cannot depend on traditional learning for interactivity. This is traditional learning. Think about the interactivity that you are undergoing right now. Not so much, right? Most traditional learning is based on a broadcast model. Some guy from Canada gets up at the front of the stage, talks to you for a while, you listen, and that was your interaction for the day. Most interactivity in learning, indeed, even in things like learning management systems, is separated from the learning. It's the weirdest kind of thing. First you study for a little while, you do a little reading, and then it's like you stop, you go over here and you go into the interaction room and you'll do a little interacting. Then you go back and you do a little, it's separated. So the traditional model of learning to a large degree minimizes interaction. What you need to do is to build yourself your own interaction network. Now, people have talked about learning, and they always talk about learning as though content is at the center of learning. But when you're building an interaction network, don't put the content at the center. Don't focus everything around the content. Focus everything around yourself. Put yourself at the center of the interaction network. Look at the little diagram. There you are with you and your computer, and you're connected to different programs, different ways of talking with other people. Your personal network is going to consist of a variety of technologies. I'm just going to run through a few of them. This list is by no means exhaustive. But email and mailing lists. How many of you are on mailing lists right now? Pretty much everyone. I've found that mailing lists historically have been essential for my own personal learning, personal professional development. No question about it. And those are a few of the lists that I've joined over the years about online learning. DIOS, www.edu, IT Forum, IFETS, etc. And there are more. Weblogging. How many of you have a weblog? 4, 5. How many of you read weblogs? Okay, well that's more. That's about 20 in the room. Weblogging is a key part of your personal learning network, your interactivity network, both writing weblogs and reading weblogs. If you're not creating this content, then you are robbing yourself of a significant degree of your own interaction. I'll come back to that in a wee bit. Personal communication tools. I'm sure most of you use instant messaging or SMS or things like that. On your computer, you can use Skype. How many of you use Skype? Yeah, almost half the people in the room. Skype is fabulous. Skype is free telephoning all around the world, no fees. Just love it. Twitter is a more recent thing that has become popular for interacting with people. Online forums. I noticed out in the display area, there's a display of Illuminate, and I told them I'd get a plug-in for them. But there's a variety of online forums. There are more events happening online than I can possibly account. And this is just in our own field. There's stuff happening in our own field, online, in these online forums every day. There's the CIDR network, which is the research network out of the Athabasca University. There's Australia's own networking. EdTech Talk, which is run by Dave Cormier and Jeff Lebo. They have something on almost every evening. I guess for you, that'd be almost every morning and more. So there are endless opportunities to take part in these live online conversations. Now, interactivity generally, pull is better than push. And what I mean by that is that when you are thinking about interactivity generally, the way you want to set things up is such that you select the content that you want. You pull the interactivity towards you, rather than have content pushed at you. Things like television, where you have advertisements, things like that, that's push content, where somebody else is deciding what the programming is and you'll be sort of passively receiving it. Now, of course, we get channels, but not very many channels. Pull, where you select the content, is a better way of being able to interact with the people that you want, with the content that you want. Another principle is genuineness or authenticity. And I think you all understand this. If you speak like a marketer, people will treat you like a marketer. And similarly, when you're listening to people out there in the world, you ought to be, and you probably are, listening for genuine voices, authentic voices, personal points of view, personal perspectives, personal experiences. Interaction is not simply about receiving content. The crucial part of that is sharing your own knowledge, your own experiences, your own opinions. One of the things that I've discovered over the years is that I learn more sharing my knowledge than I do acquiring my knowledge. Because when you share your knowledge, you're putting your knowledge through some sort of process. You're flaking it and you're forming it. But you're putting it into a way that you comprehend it best. And in order to present it. And when you do that, you're increasing your own knowledge of the knowledge that you have. And finally, with interaction, it needs to be a habit and a priority. I've heard so many times people say, well, I'd like to interact, but I just don't have the time. It's sort of like, I'd like to breathe, but I don't have time. Interaction is breathing for your brain. I just made that up. Can you believe it? That's why I do these talks. Interaction is breathing for your brain. Someone trademark that. But seriously, the idea here is that you do it on a regular basis, you make it a priority, you make it the thing you do, because all of the other work that you do is going to be based on this interactivity. Remember, you are talking about your personal professional development here. If you are not interacting, you are not developing professionally. If you are not developing professionally, then your career and your work is beginning to stagnate, and that has bad results. So there is nothing more important than doing your email, than reading your Twitter, whatever. There are no higher priorities than that. Now, interaction isn't always easy to get. Sometimes you have to go underground. If interaction isn't provided, create it. this session is a classic example, right? There's a whole bunch of people here, all of you here, you're not really interacting. You're not, well, you're sitting there listening to me, right? You could be interacting now. You know, at the tech conferences I go to sometimes, there's always at least a group of people in the back twittering away and making silly comments about the presenter. One of the things that I do when I give a talk, and I couldn't do it here because there isn't wireless, but I like to have a second screen up with a back channel to actually facilitate interaction in the room. Even if you can't do anything else, you should be taking notes and working with the content. Now, many of you are taking notes. That's good, but you're using paper. Why are you using paper? How are you going to search that later? How are you going to cut and paste that? You know, ideally, you should be creating notes in a form that you can use again later, because you may want to communicate this. You may want to take your understanding, your impression of this session, and pass it on as a blog post or a message on a bulletin board or something. The idea here is that you create interaction wherever you are. If your software that you're using and your corporate LMS or whatever doesn't support interaction, add it. Now, this might be a bit of a trick if you don't know JavaScript, but somebody in the building is going to know JavaScript. Somebody in the building is going to know how to hook a little JavaScript chat engine into the middle of a Blackboard page. And I know the learning management system wasn't designed to support a little chat room in the middle of a content page, but you can stick that content, you can stick that interaction into the middle of the content. Nope, that's not supposed to be there. Oh well, doesn't matter. Another major, why is that there? Okay, well that's a puzzle, because that's supposed to be slide like number 40 or something like that. So I'll come back to that. Well, okay. In summary, for interaction, what you are doing as an interactor is a process of network formation. You are a node in a network, and the expression is be the node. You're going to do four major things, and these are the things that you want to choose technology that helps you do. These are the things that you want your activities to be centered around. First of all, aggregating, bringing content in, bringing interaction in, finding ways of listening to people, finding ways of being part of a conversation. Remixing, taking things that are separate and putting them together in new ways. When you remix things, you see patterns that you might not otherwise have seen. You see patterns from disparate or different types of content, different types of material. Repurpose, this is localization, this is reworking it, this is taking the content that you've brought in and representing it in your own language, your own way of seeing. And then finally, very important, feed forward. This is you as a node in the network sending a signal forward, sending a signal to other people. These four things combined form the heart of interactivity. And of course, keep in mind, it's a theory. This is just a way of describing it. It's not necessarily reality. It's just a way of seeing this. Second major principle is usability. Usability at its root is nothing more than simplicity and consistency. And you see examples of good usability all around you, and Google and Yahoo are probably the paradigm instances of usability. Google almost always looks the same. Google is simple. Google works the same way every time, and you don't even need to read a manual. The elements of usability, as I suggested, are consistency. Every time you go back to it, you know what to expect. And simplicity. You know how it works. As I said, you don't need to read a manual. The mechanism is obvious in the design. If you want to find something on Google, you type what you want to find in the box. That's the extent of Google's system. Now, you might ask, consistency and usability, taking charge of this as a learner? Yes, absolutely. You can take charge of these as a learner. Take charge of your own learning by creating simplicity and consistency in your own learning. First of all, clarify what it is that you're learning. Clarify your own understanding of the domain. You look at the talk that I've given here so far. I've got all kinds of neat little slicing and dicing of things, and the three types of interactivity, the three types of personal learning, the four types of interactivity. I'm not really an 8:30 in the morning person. So just thought I'd throw that in. So what you want to do is to, at some point, sit down and clarify for yourself, and you might have to write this out or draw lots of pictures or whatever, but what you think learning is, what you think it is that helps you progress in your job, progress in your professional development. Secondly, you then want to organize this knowledge in some way. You might, for example, build a content management system. Drupal is a free content management system, and this is sort of an aside, and you might think, oh, that seems really complicated and all. Well, you don't need to necessarily do it like that. You can do it with documents and file folders on your computer. I use Drupal or other content management systems simply because I find them easier. You could get an account at, say, WordPress.com and create a blog account. The whole idea here is that you are in some way documenting and organizing your knowledge. A lot of people use concept maps, and there's a lot of concept map software, free concept map software that you can use. Again, get this down, organize it so that you can see it. I used to do it on paper. Well, that was before computers. Well, not quite before, you know what I mean. But again, the idea here is organize. And then simplify. Summarize, summarize, summarize. In the introduction, I was introduced as being well known for my daily newsletter, OL Daily. And I am well known for my daily newsletter, but what is not so well known is that I don't write my daily newsletter for the readers. Well, I guess that is kind of known to the readers, at least, who always wonder what I'm up to. But what I'm up to with OL Daily is I read lots of things every day, just like all of you. But what I do that most people don't do is I write a short paragraph describing what I've read. And I write that short paragraph because I want to summarize or capture in some way what was important. And I want to add my own voice to that, my own reaction. And I want it to be in a nice, neat capsule form that I can actually use again sometime in the future. So I do this. And what happens is I remember the things that I've read. It's a very simple process, right? Because instead of just receiving something, now I'm beginning to work with it. It's a single iteration of content that's received. It's a very common thing that people do. Only I do it on the web, and I do it in such a way that my little summaries now become a newsletter that I can send to other people. And the neat thing about that is people start sending me stuff that they think I might want to read. And so now I have much less difficulty finding really neat stuff to read because I've created this cycle happening. I share, people send. And so now it becomes a practice. Now it becomes something I do every day. Now I get up, well, the way I organize it, I get up in the morning, I review the stuff that's come in overnight, I'll do two or three of these little 100 word things, I'll move on, and in the afternoon I'll do a few more, and that's my newsletter. The idea here is I'm just getting in the practice of summarizing and organizing the knowledge as it comes in. Using your own vocabulary, understanding the way you speak. This is a thing called Wordle. This is really neat. Wordle, W-O-R-D-L-E. All it does is it takes text and it looks at the words in that text, and if the word appears a lot, it makes the word bigger, and if it appears a few times, it makes it smaller, and then it puts it in this neat diagram. It's a neat little tricky tool to help you understand what terminology you use, what vocabulary you use. It's a way of seeing your own content, seeing your own thinking reflected. And understanding your own vocabulary putting things in your own vocabulary is a way of transforming it, reshaping it, and making it your own. It's really important as a learner not to simply fall into the vocabulary that academics or government or vendors want you to use, because, and it's not on the slide, but they choose these vocabularies very carefully. And they choose these vocabularies because these vocabularies represent a way of seeing the world. And if you simply accept their vocabularies, you are simply accepting, and even more dangerously, internalizing their way of seeing the world. So you need to go through a translation process. You need to consciously reframe what they say into your own worldview. See it through your eyes rather than through their eyes. And then simplify again. Simplify the message. You're not finding reality by simplifying it, but you're making it clearer. You're finding patterns. You're finding ways of seeing, ways of perceiving the content, the material, the information that is coming before you. In general, principles of usability. Usability is social. Can you search through your own learning? Can you search through other people's learning? Do you represent learning in the same way as other people, different ways from other people? And usability is personal, and that's the part that is very often left off of usability discussions. Usability is about personal access to software, personal systems. It's about listening to yourself, understanding what works for you, and organizing your knowledge in that way. It's being reflective. It's thinking about the systems that you use. How is your desktop organized? I'm just curious. You all have computers, right? You all have icons on your computers, right? How many of you organize those icons? That's good. That's impressive, actually. Normally, that would be like 5 or 6 people in a room of 100, so that's very good. Guerrilla tactics. Again, your institutional content management system, and I've seen lots of them, is almost certainly dysfunctional. And if you are creating these content management systems, shame on you. What you need to do, you cannot depend on the institutional content management system for your own professional development. Create your own. Create your own distributed content management system where the content is spread all over the place where it belongs and you are at the center. I create my own portal pages and things like that. Create a blog and Blogger just to take notes. Why not? It's handy, and you can access it anywhere you have web access. People misrepresent blogs, right? People talk about blogs, they think they're personal diaries or journals or whatever. A blog is simply a really handy place where you can store stuff online. That's all it is. It's a text form area where you can type stuff in, and it's still there later on when you need it. Now, you can publicize your blog and have readers, etc., but you don't have to, and you shouldn't even think of a blog that way. Think of a blog as a useful way to take notes. If you were summarizing this talk, and if we had wireless in this room, then a good place to be summarizing that is in your blog or blog. Store your photos on Flickr. Store your photos on Picasa or whatever. Don't store your photos on your computer because, first of all, your hard drive will crash one day. Either that or your computer will be stolen, one or the other, right? Secondly, who wants to fill up their disk space with photos? Use somebody else's disk space, especially if it's free. The idea here is that you can use all of these Web 2.0 services, Flickr or Google Docs or Zoho, etc., as places to store your data. There it is again. I don't know why it keeps repeating. That's really weird. So, in summary, this second section on is network learning. And network learning, usability, is all about working the network in order to increase your own knowledge, increase your own capacities. But learning in a network isn't a matter of getting content and stuffing it into your head. You guys all know this, right? And so you don't want to treat your own professional development as though it were stuffing your head full of facts. Learning, well, there's the technical is the small print at the top, the principles of associativity. These are things about how the brain learns, how the networks learn. But really what that boils down to in terms of practical everyday learning is to teach, is to model, and to demonstrate, to actually do what it is that you want your learners to do. And to learn is to practice and to reflect, to do things habitually, to do things regularly over and over, to rewrite the content, to reread the content, to send out the content. It's this repetitive thing. And then to do this reflectively, to think about the practice that you're undertaking so that you can improve that practice, so that you can identify patterns in that practice. Finally, the third part, relevance or salience. That is to say, learning that is important to you now. It's a very simple principle. Again, you all understand this principle, but I'll say it anyways because it's on the slide. Learners should get what they want, when they want it, and where they want it. Everyone knows this. And so you should organize your own learning so that this happens. You need to generate relevance. You need to get the content that you want when you want it. And location, location, location. You need it where you want it, which is generally where you are, wherever that happens to be. First of all, step one, maximize your sources. How many of you read RSS feeds? This is a very knowledgeable group. That's about 40% of you. For the rest of you, read RSS feeds. Your best bet probably these days is Google Reader, although there's also blog lines and other RSS readers. If you just look up on Google, look up RSS readers, you'll find a wide range. And basically what an RSS reader does is it takes content from multiple websites and brings it together and presents it to you in a single interface. And the payoff of that is that you don't have to go searching all over the internet looking for new content. The new content comes to you. You choose what you want to see, what you want to subscribe to, and it comes to you. So set up an RSS account with some kind of RSS reader somewhere, and then start searching for feeds. And just as an aside, you might wonder, how do I find good feeds? And there's a real simple answer to that. Blog. What? Well, if you start writing a blog, and maybe tell your friends about it, but you start writing a blog and just write about what you're interested in, what you will find is that over time, people who are interested in the same thing that you are will find your content and will read your blog. This is especially the case if when you find stuff, you blog about it. So if you go to a talk, you hear about it, you blog about it. If you read an interesting web page, you blog about it. Because now people who are out there searching for stuff, they find themselves, they find their content on your blog. They go, oh, good, now I'm going to read this blog. And so what happens is you collect some readers, maybe just a few, but you don't need a lot to get started. Once you've collected readers, your readers are your new sources of information. You go to their blogs, and now you look at what they're writing about. That will lead you to more information, and it goes iteratively from there. So to find interesting content, create interesting content, and then see who links to it. Step two. Filter ruthlessly. George Siemens and I did a class called Connectivism last fall, and it was set up very much like this personal learning network, personal learning environment. And we had a whole bunch of people in the class. And we had 2,200 people in the class. And everybody started producing content. And of course, George and I, being prolific, we also produced content. And after 1 week, people were saying, well, I can't read it all. And George and I responded, well, welcome to reality. You can't read it all. You can never read it all. You shouldn't try to read it all. Pick and choose and feel free to ignore stuff, to let it pass by. If it's really important and you let it go, it'll still be there on the net somewhere tomorrow or the next day. If it's really, really, really important, everybody and their dog will be blogging it and you won't be able to escape it. So don't worry about filtering content. Very important. You make those filtering decisions because you are the one deciding your own information priority. Don't let other people make these filtering decisions for you. Now, we live in a world where other people are constantly trying to make filtering decisions for us. I'm sure you're very aware of that. You have to take charge of that for yourself. You have to pick and choose the content that you want and to, as little as possible, depend on other people doing that filtering. And the reason for that is obvious. You, and not, say, me, are the ones who know what you need. I produce, as you already know, a newsletter. I do 6 to 8 items every newsletter. The way I set the newsletter up is I don't expect and don't want people to read every one of those items. I expect them to look at the title. If the title is interesting, to read the 100-word description. And if that's interesting, to go read the original article. And I expect that to happen maybe once in a newsletter. I certainly don't expect people to read every single item because I don't expect that my tastes match your tastes 100%. That would be absurd. Get the information where and when you want. Really, you should be shunning this sort of thing. And I know you're all here, but really, you should be looking more to informal activities, informal, I don't want to say informal sessions because that's a contradiction, but your ordinary, regular grade, run-of-the-mill conversation. The class, do people still cluster around water coolers? I have never seen anyone cluster around a water cooler. But that kind of conversation, sitting around the lunchroom talking about what happens, that is informal learning. The old lessons. Do feel free to connect to your work at home. You probably should connect to your work at home because, you know, we live in a world of 24-hour information, and sometimes you're more attuned to learning stuff at, say, 7 at night, or for others, like me, not 8:30 in the morning. You know, and it's sort of funny how they've set up work environments where everybody works 9 to 5, and you know, most people aren't at their peak between 9 and 5. They're at their peak between, well, it varies, right? It's different for every single person. And ideas, and especially for somebody who's in a creative discipline, they will tell you this, they happen when they happen. We live in a world where we're working 24/7. We know this. And now, if it's about you, we need to respect the flip side of that. And the flip side of that is, if it's between 9 and 5 and we're not 100% on our game, then it's okay to take a break. We need to pace ourselves. Information and learning and doing things, it's about flow. It's not about collecting things. It's not about putting books up on the shelf. It's not about remembering or memorizing. It's about flow. It's about repeated exposure. It's about habit. It's about practice. It's about getting yourself into a position where you're being a learner on a regular basis. You're doing the things on an everyday basis that you need to do. Where relevance is defined not by topic, not by category, not by content, but by function, by how you use it, what you do with it. Where information is relevant if and only if you are using it. If you're storing information that you're not going to use, you are wasting time storing it, you are wasting space storing it. And that applies not only to your disk drive, but also to your brain. Relevance, guerrilla tactics, develop unofficial channels of information. And as an aside, ignore most of the official ones. Unofficial channels of information means you get to know the people who actually know how things work, as opposed to the people who, well, you know who I mean, right? For example, and you're probably all in an institutional email environment, you probably get lots of institutional emails. I delete 99% of those. Why would I save them? I mean, I was at a session yesterday. In fact, it was the panel at the end of the day, and I'm thinking, you know, there's a big difference between corporate learning and corporate communications, although the two are often overlapped together. Right? Corporate communications is just stuff they're telling you, as opposed to learning. Your learning should focus on the stuff that you need, not the stuff that they tell you. Create wiki pages, project pages, and the stuff that you really do need, forms, templates, etc. Link to those off your wiki. If you don't have a wiki, create a wiki. There are free wiki sites out there, PB Wiki, etc., that you can use. The idea here is you organize the information that is relevant to you using your own systems and in your own way. Demand access to information. Demand access to connectivity. Don't take no for an answer. And you know, it's the weirdest thing. And I see this in corporate and not just corporate, but educational environments all the time, where IT said, no, you can't do that. My career, well, an interesting point. I was going to say my career began, but that's false. I started a job at Assiniboine Community College in 1995. It was the first full-time job I had had since 1981. I know all about recession. They're not fun. There is no upside, just as an aside. 1995, I sit down at my desk. I want to set up a web server because I'm doing online training for the first time at Assiniboine. They're going to need a web server. IT says, no, sorry, we can't have a web server. I said, well, I'm going to need a web service. No, well, our system is just not configured to do that. So I went out and I found, I forget what it was called, but it was basically a Windows 3.1 compliant web server. And I installed it on my office desktop. And I gave it a static IP address, and then I went down to computer services and I said, type in this address in your web browser. And they typed it and they saw my page, and I said, that's coming from my desktop. I want a web server. Don't just take no for an answer. You know, and you have the capacity to change things. Don't just be like helpless. It's of all the things, you know, it's the helplessness that gets me. If your content is blocked, root around the blocking. Do not tell people, I'm sorry, you cannot access this content. I hear this so many times. Oh, YouTube is blocked here. Well, have you heard about these recent devices, you know, that you can use to get around these things? My email is blocked in my hotel because they won't allow me to use secure socket handling. They won't let me read my email securely. So I've been using my BlackBerry to read my email for the last few days. It's annoying, but it works. You can root around blocking. You must root around blocking. Network semantics. This is how you are building your knowledge of the world. You want your personal information, your personal learning networks, to be composed of four major criteria. Autonomy. You want to talk to independent thinkers, not clones. Diversity. You want to talk to many different people with many different points of view, and not just the line. Openness. You want to talk to people who are inside your organization, who are outside your organization. You want your information to flow across boundaries. and connectedness. What you know is not based on the content of any particular person, but rather is what emerges from looking at all of this content and seeing what patterns are inherent in that content. You know, and this is the key message. Whoops. This is the key message. You don't get your information from other people. You create the information. You grow the information. You grow the knowledge in your own mind by looking at, experiencing, and perceiving patterns in the world. Finally, here's what I'm really saying in this talk. First, you are at the center of your own personal learning network. That is how you learn. That is how you create personal professional development. Second, to gain from self-directed learning, you must be self-directed. You have to be responsible for your own learning. If you depend on somebody else for your learning, you are depending on the wrong person. And third, these are the principles that ought to guide how we teach as well as how we learn. And that's my talk. Thank you very much. And the recording will be available on my website, aggregatefeedforward.downs.ca.